Now to the next aspect of prayer, which is supplication. Supplication, dua, means asking for one's need. And very often in life we have opportunities to ask things of various people, hoping that we'll get our way in life. But how often do we contemplate the essence of our need? What is our heart's true desire? And how often do we direct that supplication to the only one who can answer the need? Perhaps God, if we believe in God, seems like such a distant reality that it seems ineffective to direct our prayer of supplication to that one whom we cannot see, we cannot hear, whose presence we do not yet know. And yet, it is precisely our assumption that God is far that makes it so. And it is precisely in turning to that one beloved in all moments of need that brings us close to the presence of the one eternal being. So supplication means asking for one's need. And we might feel some hesitancy to do so. We might think, after all, God is, if God exists, then God is omniscient. God already knows the secrets of my heart. So why should I have to utter my words of longing? God already knows what I want. And God is also omnipotent, all-powerful. And if God knows what I want and has the power to fulfill it and has not done so, it must mean that it is not God's wish. Why then should I impose my narrow concern upon the Absolute, who is all-knowing and all-powerful? It seems presumptuous. And yet, that objection is based in a dualistic conception of God. God exists outside of myself. My desire is disconnected from God. But for the muwahid, for the believer in unity, that is unacceptable polytheism. One is making oneself a god separate from God. There is only one God. And so one's own desire is a wave on the surface of the ocean of the divine desire. And when one realizes this, then one sees that supplication is the mode of integration in which the divine desire flows naturally into one's own desire, and one's own desire opens out into the divine desire. So one should not feel hesitant to bring forward one's true desire. We are so often disconnected from our heart's desire because, for whatever reason, we feel uncomfortable expressing it. But in expressing it, the desire itself is clarified, articulated, made manifest and tangible, and thereby it can be fulfilled. When the desire remains half-hearted, amorphous, of mixed minds, that is when desire is not fulfilled. My grandfather used to say, the one whose desire is not fulfilled is one who did not know how to desire. Fulfillment, lack of fulfillment comes with indistinctness of motive. And motive is purified and clarified in supplication. When one supplicates, one feels the intensity, the purity, the essential quality of what one wants. You go into your desire. Inhabit it, occupy it, and send it out into the universe. That is how the divine desire itself is fulfilled through our desires. They're not disconnected. And it is necessary to engage with one's desire at whatever level it is real, and not to pretend to aspire to a lofty and intangible ideal that is far outside of the scope of one's real experience, but feel in life what it is that is really driving your heart, what it is that you really want at this moment in time. Admit it to yourself, and then go into the depths of the drive of that desire. Whatever it is, if it is brought to the divine attention, it is heard. Every prayer is heard. And every prayer is answered. But not every answer is recognized. And not every prayer is answered in the way that we expect or hope. God is not a vending machine. Prayer is dialogue. Sometimes that which we ask for comes to us miraculously, beyond all hope, suddenly, just as we asked for it, in the form that we expected. And sometimes with equal intensity and pathos we pray, and that which we expected does not come to pass. Something perhaps that we did not welcome comes to pass. Is the answer absence? Absent? No. It is present if one can look for it. There is a dialogue and every prayer is heard. But the universe is not a machine. The universe is a living being. And our desire grows in conversation with the one who fulfills it mysteriously beyond our expectations. That's why we remain locked in a single immature desire. Our desire itself develops in conversation with the answer that continues to flow from the source. That is the miracle of the prayer of supplication, the dialogue with God on the subject of our deepest desires. And so when you come into the divine presence in prayer, the great dervish Shams Tabriz asked the question. He said, what can you bring to the one that has everything? What tribute do you bring to the court of the king who is the creator of the whole universe? Can you bring anything that didn't originate in that one being? Is there anything that you personally have to offer that God does not have? Any possession, any quality that you have, it's just like bringing coals to Newcastle, or as they say, bringing cumin to Kirman. But there is one thing that you can bring that God doesn't have, that God needs for you to bring. Your need. The one thing that God does not have is need. The unlimited, absolute being receives as precious the need of the limited being. This is the poem of supplication from Siraj Aurangabadi, an Urdu Chishti poet, from his Masnaviya Munajat, a poem of supplication.
Is it another long one?
Yeah. Almighty God, give me a woundless pain. Anoint my eyes with sight that does not falter. Don't shame me in the company of lovers. Make my heart blood flow from out my eyes. Bestow upon me cold sighs and hot tears. In mournful love, paint my complexion pallid. You are the only one that knows my pain. By medicine of loving kindness, heal me. And quickly bring me to my heart's desire. The dust mote pleads to vanish in the sun. Soak me in the wine of amorousness. Then make me ill again with longing's pain. A waxen candle, let me melt in sorrow. A salamander, burn me in your fire. Let me taste once more pain's pleasant pleasure, and paint for me a pale face as a boon. Draw my heart in love toward your presence. Drink me down as dregs in lover's cup. Fill my eyes for a with tears of blood. Set me groaning in my longing for you. Purify me of all dread pollution. And though I sin, have mercy on my soul. Regard not my uncounted faults for you. Have said, be not disheartened of your mercy. I have no want but to unite with you. My heart a fountain, muddied with neglect. Purify it till it makes a glass. O Lord, entrust me with your deepest secrets. Open every vault of verity's treasure. Let me have the key that unlocks hearts. Reveal to me where every jewel is hid. Unveil for me the station of law's creed and drunkard's tavern of the inner path. Plunge me in the ocean of the truth. Distinguish me with wisdom's special signs. In the garden of Gnosis, show me every show. Permit me to stroll on the lawn of unity and lead me back along its single path. Crown me king of the continent of love. My quest for light is like the prophet Moses's. Show me Sinai's epiphanic flame. Siraj, your list of wants is never-ending. Show me the hermitage of undead meaning. Show me the beauties of truth one by one, that suddenly all doubt may flee my heart. Resurrection's promise still seems distant. I grieve in heart sick longing for your face. It would be well if you would teach me here, and well if you would meet my restless gaze. One glance and render me unconscious now. Silence me with but one word of truth. Preserve me in my state of longing for you, for the sake of Muhammad, upon whose name be peace. Prayer of supplication culminates in a prayer for presence, a prayer for the intimacy of the beloved. And this presages the next station of prayer, which is invocation. Pray to God as though you see God. And this happens on multiple planes. And in the act of prayer, the plane of alam al-mithal, the plane of images, becomes active as the prayer progresses. This is a plane to which the heart corresponds. And the heart, on the plane of images, becomes a receptacle to receive the epiphany of the form of the formless God. God, in essence, in eternity, in infinitude, is formless, ineffable. But that formless being, the one being, reveals him, herself, through tajalliyat, dispensations of disclosure of the essence through the qualities. And the heart, at first, is calcified, it is petrified. The heart is conditioned, shaped by our experiences, and rigidified by the force of habit. But as the heart begins to open to the mystery of life, to awaken to love, the heart softens, expands, and becomes capable of more and more forms. The heart becomes a vessel which can contain greater and greater abundance. And sometimes it happens that the heart configures itself to receive a certain image of God. And that becomes the object of our prayer. And one may lead a very pious life and may relate directly through God through this one channel. But one is oblivious to the spontaneous manifestation of God through all the other channels of existence that are constantly unfolding. And if this position hardens still further, one becomes a kind of a fanatic, a fundamentalist who is so assured of the absolutism of one's singular experience, not allowing the heart to become a vessel for every dispensation. And so we are warned by Sheikh al-Akbar Ibn al-Arabi, who said, beware of confining yourself to a single belief and denying all else, for much good would elude you. Indeed, the knowledge of reality would elude you. Be in yourself a substance. The heart is a substance for all forms. The heart is prima materia to be molded by all forms of belief. For God is too vast and tremendous to be restricted to one form of belief rather than another. So it's not, as we are led to believe, an act of consideration, of tolerance, to open the heart to the divine disclosure in the multiplicity of revelations. The act of kindness is an act of kindness that we do to ourselves, enabling the heart to become a receptacle for reality, because reality can never be contained in a closed container. So a relationship unfolds in prayer, a relationship between the worshipper and the worshipped, and the medium of that relationship is the disclosure in the heart of the qualities. And this is a mutual process. The more that the worshipper engages in the creative act of prayer with concentration, with clear intention, with consistency, one is molding an ideal, a God ideal. That is called by the Sufis, Al-Illah al-Makhluq fil-Itiqadat. The God that is created in one's belief. One, by the act of prayer, is performing a creative act like an artist. An artist who paints a portrait evokes a presence. And to evoke that presence and to portray it on the canvas, you have to make it real in your own psyche. If you want to paint an angry person, you have to get angry in order to put it across. If you want to portray the one who hovers beyond one's highest aspirations, one has to rise up to the highest degrees of one's awareness. One has to resonate with all that is most meaningful, most beautiful, most powerful, and continue to return to it, to work with it, to portray it, to let it vibrate in yourself. You're creating an ideal, and that becomes the medium whereby you are not the creator, but the divine disclosure takes place through you. So prayer becomes the most creative of acts, in which, thinking that we are creating God, God is recreating us in the divine image. Lovely poem on invocation, invoking the beloved, feeling the nearness of the beloved, feeling the, perceiving the countenance, feeling the qualities of the presence of the one who is most beloved. Of course, the paragon of lovers from the Urdu tradition in Arabia is Majnun, the great lover who becomes the archetype of the Sufi school of love, Madhab-e-Ishq, and is the secret archetype behind the Western tradition of chivalry and romantic love. There was a cross-pollination during the Crusades. And in fact, this historically is a pattern that we see again and again, that at a time of outer conflict, when East and West, Islam and the West are outwardly in conflict, there are secret channels where that intercultural contact brings cross-pollination and mutual advancement. And that was one such occasion, and we might be seeing such an occasion in our own time. This is from the great Chishti poet Amir Khusro, writing about, he wrote a masnavi on the story of Layla and Majnun. And this is one episode from that story of Layla and Majnun. The story of how Majnun held Layla's letter to his jugular vein and his fever broke. I've heard that once Majnun, his heart on fire, was burning with a fever that inflamed him and paled him like a moon grown white with pain. As day and night the empyrean so flayed him. However many medicines they pounded, his humors still refused their balanced stations. When balms and syrups failed and quit the job, they called on amulets and incantations. One said, "No matter how extreme the fever, a muttered charm will banish it away." Another claimed, "The amulet suffuses its influence direct to mortal clay." When all had spoken, offered some advice, the erstwhile closed-lipped patient Majnun said, "The talisman of prayer's no doubt a blessing, but Layla's letter serves me in its stead." And so a little note the girl once sent him was fetched for him to touch. Its day arrived. He grasped it, pressed it to his fevered breast. The more he rubbed, the more his health revived. For every letter that bespeaks the friend is like a spell that helps the body mend. Every letter that bespeaks the friend is like a spell that helps the body mend. So you might ask yourself, what in your experience bespeaks the friend? It could be anything. It could be a love letter. It could be a star, a bird, a person in your life, a quality of presence that arises under certain circumstances. But you might find that the veil between the self and the other, between the worshipper and the worshipped, sometimes becomes very thin. There's certain circumstances, there's certain objects, certain situations that seem to become incandescent. And when one notices those things, one more and more orients one's life around those experiences so that one can draw nearer and nearer. And when through those experiences of proximity, one reaches into the very intimacy of that elusive beloved, then one may reach a moment when the distinctions and differences melt away, and it's no longer one letter that becomes the threshold, but every moment is a threshold into that immediate experience. So this brings us now to the ultimate degree of prayer. We worked first with gratitude, then repentance, and then supplication, and then invocation. And now we come to the fruition of invocation, which is communion, at-one-ment. And this is the very essence of prayer. A very great Sufi was a woman mystic of Basra, Hazrat Rabia Adawiya. And she used to cry out saying, "O Lord, if I worship you for for admission into paradise, then close its gates to me. And if I worship you for fear of hell, then let me burn in its fires. But if my worship is for your sake alone, do not deny me the enfoldment of your grace. That is a prayer of intimacy, a prayer of communion. The object of which is nothing short of the consummation of the relationship between the part and the whole, the experience of unity. It is the fulfillment of the dialogue. We began by speaking of prayer as a dialogue, and a dialogue begins with a lot of words, a lot of chatter. And then the words gradually fall away. And if the dialogue continues, it continues on the breath, through shared presence, and through the glance. And when two glances meet, an encounter takes place that is indescribable in words. Words are a very poor and unsatisfactory mode of communication. But psychiatrists have begun to study the chemical effects on the brain in deep emotional contact, and have come to speak of a phenomenon described as limbic resonance, which is an encounter beyond the rational, quantifiable domain to which speech corresponds. An encounter in which, through the glance, the depths of one person's experience speaks to another person's experience. A soul meets a soul. And perhaps some of you might have had the experience that if you look into the gaze of another person, well, at first you feel very bashful and feel very self-conscious, and the ego comes right to the surface. One feels one's egoic nature at first. But then if one is able to relax, just hold the gaze in a moment of intimacy, that superficial level of one's being dissolves, and one sees deeper and deeper behind the mask of that person, and one's own mask itself dissolves, and a communion takes place behind the masks, and at which you get to a level of a person that is identical to your own essential being. You are both pure souls. You are both pure consciousness that has taken on all manner of impressions and conditioning and habituation. But when you get through all of that, you touch upon the essence of yourself in another. And then there's a moment of a kind of a vertigo or disorientation, and you're no longer looking out from your own eyes. It's no longer clear whether you're looking out from your eyes or you're looking back at yourself through the eyes of another. There's just one unified experience. That is the unio mystica. And that is the essential experience of prayer. You are not praying to God. There is only one being, and only one prayer. That describes this paradoxical station of the lover who is outwardly separated from the beloved and inwardly united with the beloved. It's a poem of Sheikh Husam ad-Din Farooq Sufi. who was a great mystic from Gujarat, and he was so deeply transformed by the experience of zikr, by constant remembrance, that he was described as being like skin and bones. His body was emaciated and his face was bright red. All the blood went to his head, and you could hear the sound hoo, emanating from his brain. It was palpable. You would go into his presence and you would hear that vibration. His head became like a transmitter of the sacred name. He wrote this poem, this ghazal. Yes, why not have a little music? No doubt you've heard of us, wise fools. Grief-stricken, joyous paradoxes. Notorious lurkers in lover's lane. How the friend's beauty mocks us. Happy-go-lucky victims of fate. Rejoicing mourners. That's our game. Feet bound, we wander through the stars. Immobile vagrants, fit but lame. Impoverished drinkers of whole seas. Pious strivers, pickled, bent. Smiling like 100 roses, myriad nightingales lament. In oblivion's empire, we are kings. In poverty's land, the rich and few. In the cup of the soul, a heady vintage. In body's bottle, a potent brew. In the face of his splendor, I'm effaced. Veiled from him, his secret's mine. Alone with him, no lip, no mouth. I, who demand red wine, drink wine. The moving finger moves or not, and thus compelled or stilled we are. An unsheathed sword uniquely sharp, in luster like Azulfikar. With Jonah we are rays of sun. With Abu Lahab, crackling blaze. In generosity and truth, like bosom friends of former days. The ranks of hell are terrified. Like Umar, we dispatch the deeds. Oceans of modesty, mountains of mildness. Jonas, who all harm forgive. The ego's Khaybar fort we conquer, lion-hearted as Ali. Contemplating that bright face, we've nothing left in life to see. Fortune's wheel spins not for us. Here at the center of time's sphere, primal sea rebirths the self. And we return to vaporous smear. Since our drops dissolve in ocean, we have become the shoreless sea, seated on a throne of grandeur in a world of poverty. virile lions, falcons gray? Could we prey on mice and flies? Inward burning, hearts aflame, livers cooked, bright cheeks, bright eyes. Falcons, fallen amongst crows, wounded by their claws and beaks. Flee this consort of dumb asses, swift gazelle upon the peaks. Be silent, Sufi. In this degenerate age, who is there could understand this page?